I want to build a team of some bad people who I think can do some good.
We're some kind of suicide squad.
I told you!
You're going somewhere very bad to do something that'll get you killed.
Easy peasy.
Will Smith.
Y'all jokers must be crazy.
Margot Robbie.
Hi, boys.
Jared Leto.
The hell's wrong with you people?
We're bad guys. It's what we do.
Suicide Squad.
They're so intense.
In cinemas Friday. Book tickets now.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and welcome to the show. Whether you're listening live or whether you listen to it via download, via podcast feed. If you would like to come talk, if you'd like to join us in the conversation tonight, please give us a call at 646-478-3787. And you can join us on the line. And, well, tonight we are joining another week of the show, our 25th episode, mind you, and it follows another Arizona Cardinals victory after putting together their most impressive victory in I don't know how long with the 40-11 victory over the Indianapolis Colts. The story being that the reunion of Bruce Arians and Chuck Pagano, the connections between the two teams. We've got Arians, who was the interim coach last season, who stepped in place of Chuck Pagano when he went down for treatment for leukemia. It was Andrew Luck's rookie season. There were a few players on the Cardinals and staff members who were players and staff members for the Colts a season ago. If you look across the roster, Bradley Saul was with the team, the Cardinals starting left tackle, one of their starting cornerbacks, Gerard Powers. Their coaching staff, the offensive coordinator, Harold Goodwin, was the offensive line coach for under Arians, who was the offensive coordinator last season, but it was the most impressive win we have seen in I don't know how long. The numbers-wise, you look at it, and it was back to they put that many points on the board, and they won by that much. The last time it happened in 2010 in December against the Denver Broncos, and that was, as we all know it, the Jay Feely game, when Jay Feely hit a bunch of field goals, scored a touchdown on a fake, and they rolled to a victory that day. Timmy Hightower also put up some big numbers as well that game. And so now the Cardinals sit at 7-4, having won four straight games. And even today, though, they still sit they are behind in the playoff race still, as they sit at 7-4 with the San Francisco 49ers. However, they, due to the tiebreak that the 49ers have with them, are, as of today, sitting on the outside of the playoffs looking in. And joining us tonight is Seth Cox, as he does almost every single week, talking to us. And Seth, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
We're doing great. Great Cardinals victory. It's exciting to be a Cardinals fan these days, isn't it?
No, I think it's always fun to be a Cardinals fan, even when they suck. But yeah, it's it's a good time right now. So,
and you know, if anyone who is a Cardinals fan who has been a Cardinals fan for some time, it's always good. It's always fun being a fan. Well, I wouldn't say it's always fun. It's fun to watch football, but sometimes being a fan isn't all that fun after some of the stuff we've had to watch over the years. But now is one of those rewarding times. It's really kind of, We're entering December, and the Cardinals are relevant, and not just relevant in an outside way. Yes, they are outside the playoff race right now, but they're right in the thick of it, and that's something we haven't heard since Kurt Warner days. Yes, in 2011, they kind of played their way back in, but even at the time as they were winning games late in the season, was kind of a pipe dream. It took a lot of work to get to back where they were, but the Cardinals are right smack in the thick of things. Did you picture this? Did you picture this would happen heading into the season?
No, but that and not to take anything away from the Cardinals at all, but that has more to do with the fact that I don't think anybody saw the Texans and Falcons being a combined 4-14 or whatever they are at this point. 4-18, excuse me. They're terrible, and I mean, I don't think anybody would have seen that coming. Getting wins that you look at the beginning of the season and go, all right, there's a loss, and that's what a lot of us did with that Falcons game and that Texans game. You know, instead of being at 5-6, they're at 7-4. That's kind of all it takes. Two games that you maybe, at the beginning of the season look at and say, okay, those may not, or those probably won't be wins later on. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of flips and they're wins. And all of a sudden, you're now 7-4 and, in the thick of the wild card race. I wouldn't say they're in the NFC West race. I think that's a one-man race at this point. But they're in the wild card race, and that's really more than anybody could have hoped for at this point.
Well, absolutely. And what's great about this is that one of the first times we had high hopes coming into the season, not everyone did, but there was definitely optimism having Bruce Arians, hiring him on, and the way he talked about the team, and then bringing in Carson Palmer, while there were definitely mixed reviews on the acquisition, and there was so much optimism of the fan base that they could be in the mix, and they haven't disappointed. They had a rough stretch, yes, but they haven't disappointed. Now, I'll go back to my preseason predictions, and I went through the schedule, and this is honestly, if I had to, I can't pinpoint the exact. I think this is exactly where I thought they would be. Record-wise, but that was also, I think I had them splitting the Houston-Atlanta series there. I had them picking up home wins in the division, and I was sort of in my mind predicting a 4-2 division record, winning both their games against the Rams. And so they lost a couple games I thought they would win, and they won a couple of games that I thought they would lose. And hopefully my end-of-the-season prediction doesn't happen where they end up going into the final two games at 9-5 and then losing the last two and falling out of the race. That was my preseason prediction based on the division. So let's talk a little bit about the game that we saw. What was the thing that stood out to you most on Sunday, Seth, based on what you saw?
I mean, a lot of people are going to point to the offense and just how great they were, or how great they played, and they were. They were, they all seemed to be in rhythm, and we saw a little bit of Rashard Mendenhall. We saw Andre Ellington, and I mean, there was a running game, something we've been begging for. But again, it comes down to the defense. This defense is just so good. Somehow, despite the fact that they were dominant on Sunday, they fell to second in Football Outsiders defensive rankings. I still have no idea how those rankings work, and that's not a shot at them. I don't understand all of it. But this defense is just really good, and they still struggle with some things, but the fact that they're getting a pass rush now, Calais Campbell, I don't know if he was injured in the beginning of the season or tentative or what, but he has just, he's really come on, and that's really and not, you know, and Darnell Dockett has been great as well, so I don't want to take anything away from Darnell, but I really think Calais's play has kind of pushed them to this point where now all of a sudden, you know, nobody wants to run to his side of the field, and if you single block him in a passing situation, it's, you know, you're just asking your quarterback to struggle.
And then personally, I think what has happened is because Calais is really now, while early in the season he wasn't getting the sack numbers, getting the pressure on the quarterback, he was really having a very good start to the season across the board. I think the one thing that sort of did kind of settled everything was John Abraham getting his legs under him and finally getting big time snap time, playing time on the field. When he was being used, he was brought in. Granted, he came in. He was there. He wasn't there for the full off season. He was brought in right at the beginning of training camp. So he didn't get a lot of the work working in a new defensive set. I mean, he hadn't played outside linebacker in a few years. He said coming in that he kind of preferred that, but he was being brought in as a situational pass rusher and really wasn't having much of an impact necessarily. And then when the injury started happening, he's played more. Guess what? You see a big-time football player who's having a big impact, and having that rush on the edge, I think, is only helping everything across the board. At least for me, I look at a couple of things. The thing that stood out most to me, at least at the start of the game, was, oh my gosh, Rashard Mendenhall, what? Bruce Arians, maybe. I'm like, what I'm thinking, I'm sitting up there in the press box is, wow, his burst is there. I mean, Arians said it after the game. We saw some of the burst that he had in training camp, and it was really kind of nice to see as a fan, even though we all kind of been saying, more Andre Ellington, more Andre, put Rashard on the – is the fact when you see the coach believing in a player and saying, no, he's our guy, and to see him rewarded for it, he picks up some of that 24-yard catch, the reception play, pass play that he had. Was fantastic. He had, you know, what I think it was three of his three longest plays from scrimmage in that game, and looked good doing it. And then the Andre Ellington still got his carries. I mean, Rashard Mendenhall had 78 yards from scrimmage. Ellington had 93 yards from scrimmage between both in the passing game and rushing. It just was fantastic. And very quietly, one of the things that you'd noticed is Carson Palmer, again, there were so many things that stood out to me, and more of it offensively. Carson Palmer looked like a good quarterback out there. That first throw to Hausler when he was in double coverage was questionable. You're like, but after that, he was making some fantastic throws. The ball that Larry caught on the deeper pass play for the touchdown, it was a beautifully placed pass. And it was because the offensive line quietly had a very good game. In 40 dropbacks, Pro Football Focus had them set at that they only gave up. He was only pressured 15 times, which is quite something based on what we've seen in previous years. So I was really impressed by what Rashard Mendenhall did. The fact that Palmer, while they did get some sacks, I mean, overall, from the whole game, it looked like that Palmer was comfortable and his ball placement, and it's just everything seemed to be coming together. And it's kind of what we've been saying in the past. Oh, look, Rob Hauser's putting up numbers. Michael Floyd is putting up numbers. And to me, that says that offense is finally doing what it's doing. And this is the offense we've been waiting to see, what we've expected to see, unfairly so probably, since week one and didn't see it. We saw a good offensive move in week one, and then it's kind of fell apart. Was there anything else, Seth, that stood out to you in the good?
I think the continuation of Palmer being more of a short thrower is doing a twofold thing. It's showing that, you know, as much as Bruce Arians wants to be a vertical passing guy, go down the field, he's realized he doesn't have the team for that. Of Palmer's 37 attempts, only 16 of them went down the field, or over 10 yards in the air. that's, you know, that's not a whole lot for an Arians offense. It's just, you know, that's about average to, I think, what Wisenhunt was doing last year. And you know, it's really showing that Arians has kind of figured out that, okay, Arians and Palmer have kind of figured out, okay, if the protection is there, look to go deep. If it's not there, it's okay to take, you know, not, you know, non-chunk yardage. It's okay to take 6 yards on first down. It's okay to get, you know, 7 yards on second and eight. It's okay to do those things. And I like the fact that it's progressed to that, as opposed to what seemed like earlier in the season, Palmer was hesitant to do that. I don't know if that was coaching or if that was just Palmer not wanting to, you know, kind of break from what he was supposed to be doing, which was attacking downfield. But it's kind of been a consistent thing since that Falcons game. We're going to eliminate those big throws down the field, and we're going to instead look to, you know, kind of spread the ball out, go to a bunch of different receivers, and then if I can get a big play, you know, we'll hit it. If not, we'll continue to spread the ball around.
And one of the things that offensively, I just pulled this up, is a stat that I saw a couple of nights ago. It wowed me because we remember last year in 2012 just exactly how miserable that offense was. And it wasn't miserable in the fact that they would drive, be able to move down the field, and then stall. It was that they literally could do absolutely nothing. Last season, I was looking at moving the ball down the field. They were dead last in first downs last year with 246. Dead last. Through 12 games, through 11 games this season, Arizona's 12th. Arizona's 12th with 221 first downs. Now, they haven't been good on third down on the season. They're right there at 33 1/3%, so it's right there in 1 every 3. So that's really not where they want to be. It's below where they want to be. But if you look at this isn't a terrible offense. It has been an unproductive offense for much of the season. But where it's a ball, it's a team that can move the ball down the field, something we didn't see in 2012. And we saw the issues again. They left points on the board. They left points out there on the field with their stalls there at the end of drives. I'm really just – it's a different experience now watching the Cardinals this year, because last year – and it's been said before. I've heard it said before that when you have a good defense, you're always in the game. I mean, you're always in the game. But if you have no offense, your hope that there is no – you feel – hopeless as a fan, because there's absolutely nothing you guess defense can keep in the game, but then you're praying for miracles. And we don't have to, as fans, we don't have to pray for miracles this year, because they can move the ball. They can put points on the board. They just aren't, they're not, and they're not even where they could be in terms of effectiveness.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the effectiveness of the offense, and it's just been, it's been a wait, and then all of a sudden, you know, something clicked. You know, maybe it was the defenses they were playing. Maybe it was that, you know, it just finally clicked right around the Atlanta game. Maybe, you know, it's just that these guys finally realize that, hey, you know what, if I continue to press and I continue to try to do things that I'm not capable of anymore, Carson Palmer, Rashard Mendenhall, those guys, that next year I'm not going to get picked up, because this is kind of a showcase for Palmer. You know, do the Cardinals want to keep him for $10 million or whatever his cap hit is? This is definitely a showcase for Mendenhall. You know, there's alleged other suitors, but I think based on how he's played this year, those are going to fall by the wayside. So I think they kind of realize that, hey, it's time to put up or shut up, and you know what, just go out and play football and have fun. And I think they look more relaxed. Maybe that's just me, but and you're around them more than I am, but they just seem like they're more relaxed. Winning has that effect, I know, but it just seems like they're calmer, and that they, you know, aren't necessarily pressing like they were before.
Well, it's what I've seen is that lack of pressing has been because they've had success. Before they were a team that was desperate, that they really do believe that they are a playoff team. And kudos to Bruce Arians for installing that belief from day one. I know that's something that every single coach preaches from the start of the offseason, heading to the beginning of the season, and continues to believe. But this team is steadfast in the belief that they are a playoff team. And they just think, why not? They have that utter belief, and the fact that they've started winning has comforted them to know that, okay, it isn't just talk, it's for real. Then on the other side of the ball, the defense is, and I wrote a piece on it today on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. If you're listening to us live and you have something you'd like to say about the win over the Colts, and we're going to be getting into the concerns and then talking about the playoff chance that the Cardinals have. If you'd like to join in the conversation, call us at 646-478-3787, and you can ask me, you can ask Seth question, and join us. If you're listening to us via download on the download feeder, whether on the website or through iTunes or any other by means by which you obtain this, thank you for listening. And you can always send us questions via Twitter or visit comments on the site at RevengeTheBirds.com. But getting back on the defenses, I wrote a piece today about, because the new defensive ranks came out, and the Cardinals, who were statistically overall a season ago, they were, good, but they were fantastic against the pass and not so great against the run. Now, if you dig deeper into some of the numbers, they were okay. So I believe they were 17th in the league in points allowed. However, that isn't a completely fair assessment of the defensive season ago, because they gave up, I believe it was 18 return touchdowns, so that between the offense turning over the ball that went up, the opposing defenses scored, or in special teams, that really was a little bit unfair. But the Cardinals this year, statistically, across the board, they're top 10 in several categories. A team that only shares that with the Carolina Panthers of being in the top 10 in several defensive metrics. And before the season, there was a big concern. How is Todd Bowles' defense going to perform, or how's it going to look? And guess what? You could easily say, we're like, hey, this defense is better than last year's defense, and we were so in love with that Ray Horton defense that people were really concerned coming into this season. And look, guess what? They're now, in total yardage, they are now 7th in the league. And total yardage, they're still 2nd against the run. They're 4th in the league in giving up yards per play. They are 8th in scoring defense. They are 3rd in rushing yards per play and 4th in passing yards per play. This is a defense that deep into the metrics you show, is a very, very good defense. And I, for one, expected them to be solid. Man, I would either expected, if it was going to be worse, it was going to be a small step back. But I expect a kind of even plan, and it's gotten better. It's gotten better. And some of the personnel, I mean, we lost talent in the defensive backfield, but there were definitely concerns there. But the team added Carlos Dansby instead of Paris Lennon. You had Jasper Brinkley, probably an even. And then you had Carlos Dansby, who has personally, it hasn't been talked about enough. If he got that touchdown, that pick six, had he gotten his hands on and held on to those other interceptions that he dropped, this is a player we could be talking about defensive player of the year between the tackle numbers and the interceptions he's had and the passes defensed in coverage. You could have him in the mix of defensive player of the year. And it just been so impressed by how this defense has played.
Well, and you look at what the additions were, and they weren't – Brinkley, hasn't really made an effect. Dansby, as you said, has been outstanding. What it has been is Bowles kind of adapted his scheme to more fit his players as opposed to what Horton was trying to do with kind of fitting the players into his scheme. And that – that coupled with the job Todd does on the, you know, at halftime, making adjustments, changing up coverages on the back end. That's why they've been such a good second half defense in my mind. It, you know, it shows that he's not nearly as inventive, I guess you would call it, as what Horton was, but he might just be a better coach in the sense of, look, this is the talent I have at this time. It might not be the talent that I want overall, but you know what? I'm going to make it fit, and we're going to be a great unit, and that's kind of where it's at.
Well, and something that we've noticed over time, Bruce Arians talked about it in his post-game press conference. He was asked about, well, at least the defensive front, the defensive line, and the play of Darnell Dock and Calais Campbell. The defensive front four has been actually very good between those two. Dan Williams and Alameda Tayamu, they've gotten limited time, at least against Indianapolis. They played a lot of nickel. And then you had John Abraham, whose play has been really good. Shaughnessy, who's been stout overall. I mean, you don't see him get the sack numbers, but in playing a new position, he's been really effective. Arians noted one of the things that's been different is that they haven't had to blitz nearly as well. Now we know Todd Bowles they love to blitz. And I found some data, I found some numbers, some stats out there that shocked me, actually. Absolutely shocked me. It's like when Arian said, "Hey, we're blitzing less." They're still blitzing a lot, but it's less. It's a little bit less blitz heavy. And I said, "Well, let's find that out." And he's right. I mean, they still blitz a lot, but overall in the season, and I pulled the numbers based on Pro Football Focus, of course, where they track those dropbacks and blitzes. According to Pro Football Focus, on the season, the Cardinals have blitzed on 48.9% of opposing teams' dropbacks. However, that is a pretty significant drop if you look at the last four games. In that four-game winning streak, they have blitzed 39% of the dropbacks, which leads me, okay, take those four games out, and what were they at before then? After they had lost to the Seahawks, up until that, so the first seven games of the season, the Cardinals had blitzed on over half, on 55.6% of all opponents' dropbacks. And to even more starkly, against San Francisco, when they were in San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick dropped back 32 times. They sent at least five rushers 30 times. And obviously it didn't work out real well for a few times And I noticed this. It's kind of one of the things is that when they played with an eight-man box, and they played a 4-4, when they brought in Jasper Brinkley for a few plays, they got beat deep on a lot of those situations. But they are blitzing less. They only blitzed 15 times against the Colts on 43 dropbacks. They blitzed 17 of 44 against the Jaguars, 20 of 48 against Houston. And then they blitzed 27 times against the Falcons, but that was with 66 dropbacks by Matt Ryan. I don't know if that's just by nature of the fact that they are winning games, or at least in the second half when they're starting to get leads, and so they don't have to go after the quarterback as much. But it's a very interesting one because they're a very blitz-heavy team to begin with, but they pulled back a little bit, and we're seeing pressure from John Abraham just one-on-one. Calais Campbell and Darnell Dock are a wrecking crew. Those three across the board are just wrecking crews right now.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me, and obviously it's something that doesn't need to be talked about at this time, but what's interesting to me is what they're going to do with Carlos at the end of this year. You know, do you have the money to pay him? And do you have the money to keep paying guys like Darnell and Larry? And, you know, it's just an interesting thing to think about going forward. But kind of to piggyback off of what you said about Pro Football Focus and their stats, what's really awesome and really fun to look at and just how consistently good this defense has been overall, if you look at their overall grades, and obviously this is only the 11 games into the season, but if you look at their overall grades, their lowest grade is only a negative 3.6. And for those that don't know, they grade every play of every game. So it's basically a you can either score 0.1, a 0, or a minus 0.1 on every play, and you go from there. And the last couple of years, that would have made them about middle of the pack as a defender on this roster. Again, they're not maybe – they don't maybe have the flash of the Horton team, but they have much more consistency. And they do it, you know, they do it in a much different way, and it's just much more business-like. Like you said, they don't blitz as much. They're not exotic in their looks on the front end. They're not coming from crazy angles and all over the place. They'll bring Tyrann Mathieu every once in a while. But overall, they're just they run out of their base sets, which is usually a nickel for them, and they do a lot of different things in the back end, which allows pressure to be created up front without having to bring extra guys, and that's what makes them so consistently good.
Now, we look at talk a lot of good stuff, the things that stood out. Even with the 40-11 victory, concerns. Did you come out of that game with any other concerns that still are like, yeah, but. And that's kind of the fun thing we get to do, and coaches do it, but they don't talk about it. They don't talk about it as much in public is, hey, what can we do? They haven't played a perfect football game yet. We haven't seen that from it, even though they haven't close. What did you come out of that game with still concerns about?
You know, a lot of people, and you said at the beginning of the show, made a big deal about what Rashard looked like. He still was only just okay. Again, going back to kind of the drum I've been beating, the fact that he's only getting 13 carries is going to limit his effectiveness. He was at, you know, just right above 4 yards per carry on the game, at 4.15. He was bottled up in the second half. He didn't really do a whole lot. And that, again, was more from his trying to create things that weren't there, and he doesn't really have that ability to do that anymore. When he was hitting holes or hitting natural cutback lanes, that's where he was getting his yards. I still think that even as effective as this running game was, this was a really bad run defense. And it's just going to get worse as the year goes along with all the injuries they've had. And what concerns me still is I think you're not getting the most out of your players, and you know, only giving Rashard 13 touches. If you're going to, you know, expect him to kind of be your workhorse, that's not really workhorse like numbers, especially in a game where they were up so much. You know, why was Carson Palmer dropping back and throwing the ball as much as he did in the second half? I know it's the NFL, so you make them stop you, and I get that, but they threw the ball still a ton in the second half, which was odd to me. Other negatives, I don't know. Patrick Peterson, again, returning punts. Put Tyrann Mathieu back there. I'm tired of, you know, Rashard Johnson and Justin Bethel running into Patrick Peterson and making us all think he's going to get injured. So if we can put Mathieu back there, that, you know, that would make me feel a little bit better.
And then my personal concerns were it was actually one of those games where I left the game saying, Although, the one thing that we might not see much more of is Patrick Peterson on offense. I don't know how much more we're going to see that after. He's had a couple of good plays, and then dang near lost the ball on a fumble on the one catch that he had for the minus 1 yards. I wished that they were able to run the ball better in the second half, and part of that is that Indianapolis was stopping them more. They were bottling them up, but at the same time, that's the kind of thing that as a playoff contender, as a team, that you want to be able to run the ball late in the game. It's good to run the ball early in the game and then get out to a lead, but you want to be able to close those games out. And And if we look back to that 2008 season, it was kind of what happened key in the postseason was Edgerrin James be able to be effective, especially later in games, to grind out some yards and keep things open in the second half. And that's perhaps, can they keep it up? Will Andre Ellington, for example, he's been such a dynamic playmaker. Is the book going to be open on him? They're going to be able to see how to keep him out of things because they don't use him on every down. Is he going to get overused? I don't think that's going to happen, but there's still, for me, they're concerned about the running play, even the running game, even though I'm so impressed with the fact that they have been running the ball more. Case point is the Jacksonville game where they were not being successful, and they still hammered out over 20 carries for virtually nothing. And staying with that, we've seen teams. Bruce Arians, one who's notorious for it, we saw with Ken Whisenhunt that if it didn't start going well early, they just get away from it, and especially they get down a touchdown. They're trying to play catch-up early when you should be, okay, sticking with the offensive game plan. Okay, we'll run to keep it open up. And then you're left with nothing. You end up running 10, 15 times in a ball game. Other than that, just the game itself, my main concern is, as we look forward to this, because it wasn't necessarily so much for what they do playing-wise, is the fact that because they're playing so well and they're still not in the playoff spot, that it's going to be tough for them because the team's playing ahead of them. The 49ers, as abysmal as they have been over time, they're still getting wins. The Panthers are playing lights out right now. My biggest concern is the fact that they could continue to play well and still not make the playoffs.
And you wonder, and sorry to cut you off, Jess, but
go ahead.
You wonder, and you hate to say this, but you wonder what kind of impact that has on next year. One of the things that you kind of look at, and Scott, I can't pronounce his last name, but the guy that does all the kind of stats guru, Sean Church's best friend, I think, is tweeted out that Bruce Arians is like 11-1 or something crazy like that in games that come down to the last possession or something. And you wonder how long, or one score, excuse me, games in one score games. You wonder how long you can kind of get away with that. And I know it's not get away with, but you wonder how long that luck, quote unquote, can continue. You know, this year you look at it, they've got the Houston win, they've got the Tampa win, and they've got the Detroit win, and then the St. Louis was their only loss. And you look at that and you say, okay, bounce is going their way, you know, maybe calls going their way, and I'm not saying there were, I just, you know, I can't remember off the top of my head. That's the concern you have going forward. When you don't necessarily, outside of the last 2 weeks, and you can throw in that Atlanta game in there as well, it's weird to see a team win so many close games. It's just not something that happens very often in the NFL. And so you wonder if that's ever going to come back to bite them, whether it's this year or next year, you know, kind of that false hope of, okay, well, you know, maybe we end up 10-6 and they won four of those games or five of those games by, you know, one score. Well, what happens the next year if, you know, that luck, so to speak, kind of flips and runs out? That's my one concern. The playoffs, again, if they win, they're gonna make it, and that's kind of just how you have to look at it at this point, is you can lose one game, and that's all you can lose. So if, you know, and you don't even want to say you can lose one game to Seattle, but I'm just going to say Seattle beat San Francisco as well. So you can lose that Seattle game, and that's it. And, you know, I saw a lot of Cardinals fans tweeting out, oh, come on, Redskins, you know, what are you doing? You had this, you had that. You know what? Nobody's going to help you at this point. The Cardinals are on their own. I've seen people say, oh, well, Carolina has, you know, New Orleans twice still. What happens if Carolina actually wins those two games? What happens if Carolina wins the South? Then all of a sudden the Cardinals are, you know, they don't have the tiebreaker over the Saints. So, you know, hoping that a team loses, that's the worst thing you can do at this point. Just watch your team and know that if they win, if they, you know, find a way to get to 12-4, they're going to be in the playoffs. You know, I don't think that 12-4 is going to happen. That's, you know, that'd be amazing, but that's what the mentality needs to be, not only from obviously the players, but from the fan base, that that's the way they're going to get into the playoffs.
Well, here's some numbers for you, and this is via the team. The team releases a lot of this information in their game releases. If you think back to the hiring that Michael Bidwell made of Bruce Arians, and for many of us, it was considered very much a surprise, as we thought, okay, oh, Andy Reid, oh, wait, no, Ray Horton, oh, wait, no, Mike McCoy. It was really back and forth, and then Bruce Arians, it seemed seemingly, whoa, Bruce Arians, awesome hire, but whoa, where'd he come from that he suddenly came available? And one of the selling points is Michael Bidwell said is that if you look at Seattle and you look at San Francisco and the quick turnarounds they had, under a coaching change, that's what they were looking for. They weren't looking for a long-term rebuild. They were looking for an almost immediate change to competitiveness while at the same time looking forward. These are really kind of, I don't know if you could say, well, he's been in fortunate situations. Granted, Arians himself has not, aside from this year and last year, he was not in a head coaching capacity. However, if you look over Bruce Arians' coaching career, teams where he goes to win. It's dating back to 1990, when he joined the Chiefs staff, they made the playoffs in the second year that he was with them. The Indianapolis Colts, and when he joined them, they made the playoffs the second year he was on staff. The Cleveland Browns made the playoffs the second year he was on staff. The Pittsburgh Steelers made the playoffs the first year he was on staff. The Indianapolis Colts a season ago, they made the playoffs the first year he was on staff. That's really, you kind of look and get, he knows how to coach. It is, I'm guessing he's a very underrated, perhaps he's an overrated play caller, an overrated for you could, some could say he's overrated as a play caller and offensive coordinator, an offensive genius in the league. But I think he's underrated as a coach overall, the way he manages his players, because he truly, I mean, he has, you wonder how it's going. He's so good with close games. He's so good of high stakes games in his players. I mean, last year, the role that the Colts got on, they late the season push. It's really starting to, this season's beginning to mirror that a little bit. And you wonder, wow, maybe there's something to this Arians guy and his coaching.
Yeah, and Arians has always been, you know, you can say two things about that. One, you know, he's a winner, or two, he's been put in situations where he's, you know, been able to win, if that makes sense. Basically, he's walked into winning situations outside of this one, obviously. I mean, even the Colts, I mean, he walked in, the turnaround was, you know, staggering, but, you know, that again was a lot of luck, and I'm not talking about the quarterback. I mean, and they got, I mean, you saw them in the playoffs.
Oh, because of technical difficulties right there. Oh, boy. I hope he gets back on. Are you back?
No.
All right, Seth. We'll see if he's having some internet troubles, I think. Oh, we just lost him. So, well, He will get back on the line here in a moment. As we move forward, looking forward, again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. If you're listening to this live and you would like to call in, take the opportunity right now. Take a few minutes to call in, 646-478-3787. But don't do that if you happen to be listening to the downloaded version. You won't be able to get through. Though, if you want to comment, by all means, if you have something to say, hit up revengeofthebirds.com. This show will be on the front page in the morning, and you'll be able to leave your comments there. You can talk to us on Twitter and on Facebook at facebook.com/revengeofthebirds or on our Twitter feed, Revenge of Birds. Playoff chances, what we're going to be talking about here, it might just be me for a little bit, is the playoff chances and looking at the remainder of the schedule. What are the chances that they have? Right now, the Cardinals sit at 7-4. As the seventh seed currently. They are tied in record with the San Francisco 49ers. They're tied in record with the San Francisco 49ers. But as of right now, San Francisco holds that tiebreaker by nature, by way of the fact that the 49ers defeated the Cardinals. However, they do have one more matchup in week 17. Assuming the Cardinals win that game, that's not an assumption. Let's pretend that they do. That puts them at a tiebreak that way. And then what would then be the key part is how they have done in the conference. Now, if you're looking at the standings right now, the Cardinals at 7-4 in the NFC are an even 4-4, while the San Francisco 49ers are a tick better than that at 4-3. And look at the Cardinals' schedule the rest of the way. The Cardinals have the Eagles and NFC. They have 1, 2, 3, 4 NFC teams left on their schedule with the Eagles, the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Niners. So we look at that. Welcome back, Seth. Are you back with us? Can you hear us all right? Can we hear you?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Jeff. Sorry about that.
All right. Now, you were in the middle of saying something. Do you want to try and make that point again, or do you want to move on with the playoff chance of the schedule that remains?
Yeah, real quick. All I was saying was that, you know, last year was a really weird season for the Colts, and while they're, you know, 7-4 now and in the driver's seat, so to speak, of the AFC South, I don't think anybody would tell you that they're like a Super Bowl contending team. I don't think anybody would think that. So, again, as far as Arians goes, he's done a great job of getting the most out of his players, and that's really all you can ask from a coaching standpoint.
I would definitely agree with that. Just put that out there. We thought a lot of the same thing about Ken Whisenhunt to start things off. Ken Whisenhunt got off to a tremendous start. Things struggled that first season. He got hot down the season. He quite didn't get it. And then the next year, the Super Bowl, next year, just the 2 years in a row where they win the division, and then things fell apart. So I'm glad that the talk is positive. It's such a wonderful thing. And now we look at the schedule that remains. The Cardinals go on the road to Philadelphia. They come home to play the St. Louis Rams. They head on the road 2 weeks in a row to play Tennessee and to play Seattle and will end their season at home against the San Francisco 49ers. From what you were saying, basically to ensure a playoff spot, you basically said they need 11 wins. Are you going to stick that to make sure that they don't have to count on anyone else? 11 wins will get them in. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think 11 wins gets them in because, again, I'm thinking that the 49ers, I just think the Seahawks are so good. I don't see them losing, even though I believe the next game between the 49ers and Seahawks is in San Francisco. I still don't see the Seahawks losing. And then so that's basically a wash for both sides, at which point you kind of roll into at 10-5, and whoever wins goes to the playoffs, and whoever doesn't, you know, goes home, and that's what you have to hope happens at this point.
And just looking, I think 10 wins would get them, I think. But that would be really, it really would be something to say if they got to 10 wins and weren't able to get in, just looking at the competition there in the NFC. The 49ers' schedule remains. They are going to be at home this weekend against the Rams, which, by the way, the Rams are no cakewalk by any means. Based on the way they played the past couple of weeks, just beating down the Colts and just clobbering the Bears. Now, granted, those are teams who are have personnel issues. The Bears are not; they don't have Jay Cutler. Josh McCown has certainly performed admirably in his absence. And then the Indianapolis Colts, naturally, they've had some issues. I mean, they've lost Reggie Wayne. You can't diminish that loss to the team, to a team like that. I think the Cardinals actually will face the Rams in a better situation, since they will be the second. The Rams play 2 weeks in a row on the road. They have road divisional games. So the Rams, next week, they are playing at San Francisco, and then the following week at Arizona. That second week on the road, I think, will be the big test for them. But that's a good team. So I by no means do we think that that's going to be an automatic win, even though they don't have an awesome record on the season. They could play themselves kind of back into the picture with a win next week after that, if they manage to, Rams won two more games in a row, they'd put themselves right in the middle of things. But 49ers have three of their five last games at home, and their schedule is really quite doable. They face the Rams at home, then they face the Seahawks at home. Then they go to Tampa. They're at home against the Falcons, and then they end the season on the road with the Cardinals. The Seahawks game, that's kind of a toss. You think Seahawks? Seahawks are so good. Seattle is really good. I don't know what to think, even though they do have some issues in the secondary now. That Buccaneers game is not a cakewalk, as we learned earlier in the season and the way they've been playing now. The Falcons, of course, if San Francisco can't beat Atlanta at that point of the season in Week 16, then that's really good news for the Cardinals. But you look at the Panthers now face the Buccaneers at home. They go to New Orleans. They come home to face the Jets. They host the Saints, and then they end at the Falcons. So they've got themselves, yes, they've got two games against the Saints, but they are playing so well. Assume they split those games. They split those games. I think the Jets game, they win. And then, so they're going to, they got two wins, maybe probably three, maybe four wins. You might be seeing a 12-4 Panthers team. That's very doable. Could you imagine having a 10-win team that doesn't make the play? I don't know how often that happens, but considering what 10-6 won the division outright when the Cardinals did it in 2009, and then the next season in 2010, when 7-9 won the division for Seattle, that's really, really something when you have a 10-6 team miss the playoffs. What do you think of it? If you're looking at the Cardinals' schedule, though, other than the fact, yes, you assume the loss at Seattle, how many of those viably could they possibly survive with a loss?
They can only lose to this week and Seattle. Those are the only two games that they can lose. If you have a loss to a Rams team that is not a bad team by any means, but you should beat them at home, and a loss to a Tennessee team that lost to Jacksonville, and, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a nice story and everything, but he's just not a great quarterback, then you know what? And you know, I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, but if you lose to those two teams, you don't deserve to make the playoffs, and that's just kind of my feeling. And that's not to take anything away from the Rams, because they've played excellent. Who knew that the best thing that could happen to the Rams would be Sam Bradford going down and Brian Schottenheimer being forced to scheme the offense around Zach Stacy and Tavon Austin, as opposed to letting Sam Bradford try to be the next Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. So, you know, and that defense is ferocious but flawed, and you know they're a very beatable team, especially, you know, the Cardinals play the run so well. And you never want to say you don't see a way that they could lose that game. You would hope at this point in the season, with everything that they've, you know, kind of put together, that at this point it's kind of a no-brainer that they're going to win a game at home versus a St. Louis Rams team that is injury depleted and, you know, not overly, you know, great in the places where, you know, they don't really have any personnel matchups that will hurt outside of Jared Cook, but, you know, that's another story. So, and then you look at Tennessee. Tennessee has a good defense, and they have an impressive running game. But again, what do the Cardinals do best? They stop the run. You know, if Ryan Fitzpatrick beats you, again, if you lose games to Kellen Clemens and Ryan Fitzpatrick, you kind of have to reevaluate where you're at. Even if you are, you know, 8-6 at that point, that those are some weird losses to take late in the season when you're trying to make the playoffs. Obviously, Seattle is Seattle. You know, could the Cardinals win? Absolutely. Anything can happen on any given Sunday. You just don't want to, you know, you just don't want to put a win on the board at that point, because it's easier to say, okay, we're looking at 11-5 as opposed to, hey, we're going 12-4. And as fans, that's okay. But, you know, it's also okay to be realistic too. So, and then San Francisco, you know, a lot of people point to, oh, the Cardinals were in it till the Larry Fitzgerald fumble or the Alphonso Smith fumble. Or, you know, were they really in it? I mean, score-wise, maybe. But that game didn't feel, I mean, at least to me, that game didn't feel as close as the score ended up being, actually. I felt like the 49ers kind of controlled the tempo of that game the entire time. And the Cardinals had no answer for Vernon Davis at that point. And then, you know, of course, there's this week with Philadelphia. The concern being that the Cardinals still struggle against the pass. And I wouldn't say struggle in a bad way. They still are not great against the pass like they are great against the run. And obviously, Nick Foles is apparently the second coming of Tom Brady now. So he has, you know, he has kind of just turned the football world on its head, so to speak. So you wonder if that's going to be a matchup that's going to be tough for the Cardinals, especially deep, where the Cardinals have been burned deep with speed a little bit. But the Eagles' defense is just so bad. You think that the Cardinals' offense would be able to do enough, and that the Eagles' defense, or excuse me, the Cardinals' defense is, you know, so good that they would be able to do enough to slow down the Eagles' offense, which is very good, and win this game. You know, maybe that's the hope in all of us coming out to a point where now we're looking at, you know, things from a much different perspective and a different plane than we were even, you know, 4 weeks ago when it was 3-4 and we were saying, okay, these are, you know, must-win games. So, you know, who knows at this point?
Well, and looking, I'm going to take a little bit different perspective, is that I think that this week, that the game this weekend against Philadelphia is far more important than that Tennessee game. At least in terms of a playoff perspective, is if the Cardinals are going to have two losses in their last five games, they can survive a loss to an AFC team. With the things bunching up the way they are, they really can't afford a loss in the conference. And truthfully, a loss to Philadelphia kind of muddies the waters even further for the Cardinals. When I was the post I wrote this morning, rather, we'll say that what is Tuesday morning, as by the time most of you are listening to this, it is no longer Tuesday. On Tuesday morning, I kind of updated the playoff picture and basically put the situation, the Cardinals are 7 and the Eagles are 8. However, the way things are looking in the NFC East is that the division winner is going to make the playoffs. The second player, the second place team, will not. Excuse me. But if we get in a situation here, the Cardinals lose to the Eagles and the Cowboys win, which they viably come here, they're playing the Raiders. They play the Raiders at home on Thanksgiving. That would put Dallas at 7-5. A win by the Eagles would put them at 7-5, and the Cardinals losing would go to 7-5. That then bumps the Cardinals another slot below because of the head-to-head matchup. And that further muddies the waters as well, because then the Cardinals go to under 500. They go to 4-5 on the season in the conference, which, again, you go head-to-head, you go in the conference. I think this weekend becomes, and I didn't think this before, but now going into this weekend, this game is more important than even than the Indianapolis game. And I was kind of putting that game, that winning that Indianapolis game, as a linchpin, and saying, okay, I believe this team is playoff able. I didn't say they were going to make it, but by winning the last four games, I said, hey, they really are a contender. But this game, this game is a kind of crucial. They can afford it, even though Tennessee's not good, but they can survive a Tennessee loss. If they lose to Philadelphia, they put themselves behind the eight ball with another team having a tie break with them. So Philadelphia would own a tie break over them. As of right now, San Francisco owns a tie break out over them. And then say the Bears win, and I think that would put them, let me check so the Bears are in the conference, they're 3-5. That would put the Cardinals and the Bears tied in the conference. And so then you're putting yourself in a situation where it's going to be really tough to leapfrog multiple teams.
Yeah, and I understand the tiebreaker scenario. I was just looking at it from the perspective of if you're a playoff team, you don't lose games like Tennessee.
Definitely.
Maybe that was just me, though. So, I think Philadelphia is actually an okay team, though. So I think a loss to them on the road in a, you know, kind of a playoff-y game, so to speak, would be understandable. But, again, I agree with you. They can't afford to lose conference games either. So that I definitely get where you're coming from on that. You know, it's interesting not to beat a dead horse, but the fact that this game did not get flexed, just, you know, and I almost wrote a post on it, and I kind of did last week, but it just speaks to the level of, you know, it's still the Cardinals, unfortunately. We love
it. It really is. I mean, the Cardinals, I mean, they have Kurt Warner. Now, this year they have Carson Palmer. So Carson Palmer does not move any barometers there. He does not raise gauge interest at all. He's one of the most meh quarterbacks out there. There are some people who hate him, but there really is the national thing. They don't hate him. He performs okay, and he doesn't drive any interest at all. So you get the fact that the Cardinals historically bad. So there's no national interest. Yes, they beat the Colts, but on the East Coast, who cares about the Cardinals? They have to keep winning. They have to.
Yeah, and that's what's so unfortunate is because, you know, they can say all they want that they don't care. Oh, it's, you know, we just got to go out there and, you know, whatever Arian's quote was, and not to talk bad about the coach, but whatever his quote was. But you know what? Those players have pride, and winning games is great, but being overlooked constantly, especially in a bounce back year, I know some people use that as, you know, fuel to the fire. But at some point, it does weigh on you to the point, you know, where you're like, okay, what the hell do we have to do to be taken seriously at this point? I mean, we're beating everybody that's put in front of us. You know, yeah, sorry that it just happened to be that San Francisco, you know, New England weren't on our schedule at this time like, you know, it was for Carolina. But, you know, it's just, it's frustrating. And you know, Kent Summers said, I don't mind not having to be out there that late. And I understand that. But, you know, it was an important thing for Cardinals and Cardinals fans to say, you know, be able to say, look, we're being taken seriously finally, and this team, you know, is respected, and there's still that kind of, you know what, it's still the Cardinals, and it's still, okay, you know, you had a nice little run, but look who you're doing it against, you know. I feel like that's still the national perception. They're getting a little more pub week after week because they're stacking wins. But, again, it's still, you know, oh, it's just the Cardinals. And then, you know, oh, like you said, it's Carson Palmer. Who cares? You know, and that's just weird to me.
As we close up the show, Seth, I'm going to withhold from the prediction yet, and that's simply because I've got another show I'm going to do later this week. I already have an interview lined up with the lead writer over at BleedingGreenNation.com, our SB Nation Philadelphia Eagles site, so I already have an interview lined up, so I've got him lined up as a guest, and so I will have a show previewing the Eagles game coming up later this week. So I'm going to hold off on a prediction, but I'm gonna toss you in the fire a little bit, Seth. If you had these guests right now, make a prediction for this week's Eagles game.
You know, I picked them to lose in our pick'ems, but that's just out of, you know, sheer superstition. I think we're now at 5-2 in games I picked against the Cardinals. So, you know what? I really like last week. If the Cardinals offense can continue to roll, there's no reason the defense isn't good enough to make enough stops for the Cardinals to win this game. It kind of reminds me of last week's game, except for the fact I don't think Indianapolis or Philadelphia is going to come out and crap the bed like Indy did. And you know, it is an early game on the East Coast, so there's always that concern of if they start slow against the Eagles, you know, this isn't the Jaguars, so there may not be an ability to come back like they did, or, you know, they may be in a dogfight to the end. But I really do think this is a big game to show that they've turned the corner in that sense, coming out on the road and making a statement. And you know, I think they're going to do it, but maybe I'm just getting too optimistic at this point.
Hey, I don't think you can be up too optimistic, Seth, considering you are our resident negative Nancy. So.
That's right, and I'll prove that tomorrow. So with my article. So.
Well, thank you for coming on tonight, Seth. We really appreciate the time. Arizona Cardinals fans, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. You've been listening to Seth Cox. Thank you for coming on tonight. I'm Jess Root. I'm your host. If you're listening to this via podcast, thank you. Thank you very much. Please continue to subscribe if you can. If you go to iTunes, you subscribe to our show, Revenge of the Birds Radio. You can also do so via Stitcher Radio, the Stitcher Radio app for Android. Go ahead and visit RevengeOfTheBirds.com. We will be back. I will have a show on the site later this week as I will be speaking with Bleeding Green Nation's lead writer. Until then, have a good night. That's Seth. I'm Jess. Thanks for listening.
Have a good one.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at Facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.